A Wizard's Pupil. Written by the Loyal Royal Guard. Read by Devil with a Bird Dress. Summary. All his life, Faramir told his brother his dreams. Or, what if everything was the same, except Faramir is trans? A character study of his childhood, manhood, and the dreams that shaped his life. Author note. This was a fun little idea that took hold in my head and turned into another of my little queer nods at Tolkien. Many thanks to Mill and Twig of Willow for cheering and beta. Content warning for brief instance of misgendering, because even in book canon, Denethor is never going to get Dad of the Year. All his life, Faramir told his brother his dreams. Even when they were small, haunted by some half-forgotten nightmare, he would crawl into his brother's bed and whisper it to him in the dark. Then Boromir, 5 years older, 5 years braver, made all nightmares seem small and pale, and all good dreams seem real and true. Even when they were children, Faramir was given to dreams of darkness, of the gathering threat he was too young to understand, but saw from every window that faced the east. Because he told his brother all his dreams, he did not, afterwards, remember how old he had been when he shared the one dearest to his heart. The one that shaped his life more than any other, but for one, and that not for many long and bright years. He did not remember his age, but he knew where he was, on a pale, cold morning of coming spring, sitting between the roots of the white tree with a book on his knee. He liked it there, and many days looked up, hoping to see a bud or bloom upon the bare white boughs. The guards did not mind him, though they did not speak while they stood at their posts. So it was there, on the roots of the tree, that Boromir knew to find him. Faramir's hair, in those days, was long and sleek as a raven's wing, and bound up so the wind wouldn't make a tangle of it. His skirts were pale lavender and gray, though already marked with a grass stain he had tried and failed to rub out. Sometimes his feet were too quick for the rest of him. His father said he lived with his head in the stars. Boromir, he remembered, was in those days already tall and beginning to broaden in the shoulders. The first sign of the great man, the great warrior, he would become. Faramir admired him desperately. He reached out to tussle Faramir's hair as if he was still a baby, and Faramir ducked a moment too late, so that Boromir caught one of his braids by accident and pulled. "Sorry, sorry. It's all right. I hoped you would come." Boromir's gray eyes grew grave, and he sat down on a root. "You were up early. If it was a bad dream, you could have come to me." "Father says I'm too old." What Father really said was that Boromir was too old to have his sister climbing into his bed at night. "Besides, it was a good dream." "Tell it to me?" Boromir lowered his voice, conspiratorial. This was their secret, the things they shared with each other. It filled Faramir with warmth. "I dreamed." He twisted his hands together around the book in his lap, suddenly breathless with what he wanted to say. "I dreamed I was a boy like you." He was afraid Boromir would laugh, would think it was a joke. It sounded like a joke, and it would not be untrue that Faramir often tried to make him laugh. But not this time. And perhaps Boromir saw it in his face. Whatever he saw, he did not laugh. His expression was thoughtful. "And that was a good dream?" Faramir lowered his voice to a whisper. "I want to be a boy like you. I want to be your brother." "Well," Boromir said, still thoughtful, as if weighing some great decision in his mind. Then, quite suddenly, he smiled. "All right, little brother. I don't see why not. A great relief swept over him like a wave, and he was giddy with its passing. It was that, later, that he would remember above all. Boromir's smile, and that immense relief. Break. At first, Denethor indulged his children. Faramir was allowed to change his skirts for boys' clothes, and when Boromir insisted he should have the livery of the Tower Guard, as Boromir had been given at his age, Denethor indulged that, too. Even when Boromir gave him Gondor's worst haircut with his own small dagger, sawing through each braid until all his long black hair lay scattered around them, Denethor only smiled distractedly and had one of their old nurses make Faramir more presentable. Perhaps, Faramir thought much later, when he was old enough to think about such things, Denethor indulged him not only as he would a child's game, but because it spared him, too. Perhaps, when Denethor looked at his youngest child, with cropped hair and a boy's first armor, he was not so much reminded of the wife he yet grieved. Whatever the reason, the years passed, and Faramir grew tall and fair after the manner of his people, and many in the city forgot he had not always been Denethor's son, or else never knew at all. He had known from an early age how to ride, but it was Boromir who first taught him to draw a bow, standing behind him to guide his hands, and it was Boromir's swordmaster who trained him. In those early days, when anyone balked at Faramir's requests, it was Boromir who insisted, ever his champion. He was, by nature, a bookish child, but he longed to be a boy, and in Gondor, a boy must fight. He longed to be a boy and modeled his boyhood after his brother. Boromir, ever strong and warlike, a born commander, who would one day defend Gondor with the same devotion with which he defended Faramir. Faramir lacked his brother's strength, his broadening chest, his proud height. He was quiet and clever, studying the wars of their history while Boromir planned the wars of their future at their father's right hand. In Faramir, as in his father, the blood of Numenor ran true, but it did not unite them. It was Boromir that Denethor favored, and Faramir would never know if it was because they did not understand each other, or because they did. When Denethor looked at his second son, he disliked whatever it was he saw there, the likeness to himself, or the difference. Break. There came a time when Denethor ceased to indulge him. The farce, he said, had gone on long enough. Faramir was no longer a child. He was entering womanhood and must begin to act like it. The expectations on him were not those of Boromir, of a son, and he must begin to fulfill them. It had been so long enough that sometimes even Faramir himself forgot he was not like other boys, that the pronouncement shocked him into silence. This Denethor took for obedience, but it was not. He was given tutors after the fashion of a daughter, and his swordmaster and the tower guard turned him grimly away. By order of the steward, they said, and sounded sorry for it. Faramir withdrew. Unable to practice the act of war, he flung himself all the more into the study of it. Boromir was furious. It was the only time in his life Faramir ever heard him raise his voice to their father, before or after. But Denethor only said, "You have your duty, and she has hers." It was in these years also that the Grey Wizard came to Minas Tirith, and on permission of the steward, entered the ancient archives of the kings. Faramir was at once fascinated by the old man, by the grey eyes that saw deep and far, by his gruff voice and his bristling brows and the quick smile through his beard. It was his one pleasure, then, to make an assistant of himself, bringing the wizard what he needed, seeing that his candle did not burn down and that his cup was filled, listening to him mutter to himself as he leafed through dusty pages no man had opened in millennia. Until, one day, he worked up the nerve to ask the question eating at the back of his mind, beneath all the others he'd eagerly asked before. A question not about history and myth, but about himself. "Mithrin, dear?" The wizard stood on a terrace outside the archives, thoughtfully chewing his pipe. It was, Faramir had learned, the best time to talk to him. "They call you a wizard."
"Hmm. I have been called many things. Wizard is certainly one of them."
He puffed out a great ring of smoke that drifted up into the clear blue of the sky. "Can you... will you..." Faramir drew himself up as those ancient eyes turned on him. "Will you turn me into a boy?" Mithrandir looked very hard into his face and was silent a long time. Faramir stood as if he had grown roots. He could not have stirred from that spot if he had wished to, though his mouth was dry and his heart like a hammer on the anvil of his ribs. At last the wizard puffed out his cheeks with a cloud of smoke, and his eyebrows bristled fiercely.
"I cannot turn you into anything," he replied. "Least of all what you already are."
"But my father," Faramir began, but Mithrandir shook his head.
"Neither do I have the power to alter the Lord Denethor's mind in any matter, even this."
"You could talk to him?" Some of the old man's ferocity softened. The sweet, leafy smell of his pipe hung about them in the clear, still air. "Alas, I fear he would listen still less to me. It is your heart, not my voice, which will guide you, Faramir, son of Denethor. In this and many other matters, you must trust it and defend it. The wise ask for help and accept it, but even the wise, too, cannot always look to others to fight their battles for them."
Then he turned and tamped out his pipe with great finality.
Break. Faramir knew his own heart. He had been certain of it since his dream, perhaps even before. He was more sure than ever now, trying to bend himself into his father's demands and feeling how ill they fit him. For the first and only time, he defied his father. He dressed in the livery of the Tower Guard, and as he could not train with anyone else lest they suffer for defying their lord, he trained alone. He knew Boromir would have helped him, but it was as Mithrandir said. This was his battle. It was no surprise when Denethor sent for him. He was angry, cold in his wrath. But Faramir thought it was not only him his father was angry at. He was merely the only available target. It would not be the last time.
"You have been spending too much time with a wizard. He has set you to defy me, has he not? I see it in your eyes, though why he should deceive you in such a way I do not know. It shall not stand."
"I do not deny I have learned much at Mithrandir's side," Faramir said, lowering his eyes, unable to hold his father's too keen gaze. The bright blade of it cut into him, yet misread what it saw. "But he has not deceived me."
"Then he seeks to turn you against me."
"What am I that I was not before he came?"
"Disobedient," Denethor snapped. "I see I indulged you too long, but you are no longer a child. It is time you stop acting like one."
"I do not wish to disobey you, father, nor to be a child. I would be your son and a man, and defend Gondor for the love of my city and my people. Why should I desire any less, simply for the manner of my birth? I am capable, ask my tutors. Why should I content myself to do less than what is expected of the least boy of Gondor, of my brother?"
"You desire no less than Boromir? Very well, have your way and see how you like it outside the safe confines of the Citadel. You may regret your choice long before I let you rescind it."
Break. Thus, Faramir was made a captain, and despite his youth, it was as a captain that he was sent among the rangers of Ithilien. Boromir wanted to protest it, to offer Faramir a command under him instead, where he could learn of war by his brother's side, and under his guidance and protection in Osgiliath and abroad on the marches of Gondor. But this generosity Faramir refused. His father had given him a challenge and a chance, and he would fail at neither. Very likely, Denethor thought he would come crawling back to Minas Tirith in a month and beg mercy, even intended him to, for life in Ithilien was hard and unforgiving under the shadow of the east and the mountains. Certainly it bore no resemblance to the grandeur and plenty of Minas Tirith, to the comfort and protection that was his birthright, but not the birthright he desired. No, that was not quite true. Often, Faramir did desire it, to spend his days with his books and his poetry, to sit beneath the white tree, to lie in his own safe bed. But his bed was kept safe by the men of Gondor, and he would do no less than any of them. He could not hide behind the walls of the city he loved while others protected it for him. It was because he loved it that he remained, even if it meant sleeping in the open, or on hard ground, or under the danger of marauding orcs. That battle horrified him to the core only made him more certain that he must remain. It was no easy thing. He was younger than even the youngest of the men in his command, and in the close quarters of Heneth Anun, there was no concealing from them his difference. They frightened him a little, these men who were keen-eyed and hard-handed, whose experience and care was worn into the weathered lines of their faces. But Faramir was not overproud. He knew he could not prove himself to these men, and so he did not try, but learned from his lieutenants well, and in the wilds of Ithilien he blossomed. And if he, too, grew keen-eyed and quiet, they saw it better than he did. He won their respect and their love, and when at need he did return to Minas Tirith, it was never in regret. Break. He would never forget the second dream that changed his life. A whisper of half-forgotten legends, a warning and a summons, names he knew only from his long studies at the wizard's side. Another dream shared with his brother, waking from a troubled sleep. But the first they both had. "What do you suppose it means?" Boromir asked him. "Isildur's bane?" And Faramir could say only, "I do not know." "Then I have to go." No dream of clear longing, this, but one which shaped his life perhaps no less than the first. It did not tell him what he was, but from its consequences he learned, perhaps, what he was not. That he would never be his brother, that nothing, and least of all Faramir himself, could replace him, though he came within the very shadow of death and the attempt. On the wings of that dream, Boromir left him, and it did not bear him home alive. Faramir, to whom the dream had come first and often, would wonder all his life what would have passed if, like the first dream, he had followed it instead. But Boromir, the eldest son, the mightier warrior, the hero of Gondor, took instead the long journey west to Imladris, chasing myths, and Faramir stayed behind. Break. The third dream, therefore, he shared not with his brother, but with the Lady Eowyn, who had herself won all the glory any man or woman could desire, and in victory found she no longer desired it. His dreams had often been dark and strange, but he did not know what it meant, either, to dream of Numenor swallowed by the sea, even as they stood upon the walls of Minas Tirith, and waited to learn if Gondor, too, would go into darkness and memory. He walked upon the walls with the Lady Eowyn, and heard her story from her lips, and saw in her some part of himself he had not known in any other. He saw in her, too, his own fate, diverted only by a dream and the love of his brother. She had not desired manhood itself, as he had, but she, too, knew the confines of a woman's life when it did not fit well, and he understood her. She did not, at first, believe him. How comes so noble a man of Gondor to know a woman's plight? "Because it was nearly mine," he answered her, and even the wind seemed to hold its breath. How small a secret it seemed then, under the great shadow of the east. But she turned her face from the darkness up to him, and in her eyes he saw defiance turn to confusion, and then a softening understanding. The cool breeze of the first spring rains blew over them, and Faramir felt only lightness. Her hand touched his. He loved her, then, and ever after, and wondered if she could love the whole of him in return. It was not a thing he had ever dared to hope for, in what little time he had ever had to think of such things at all. To be loved by a woman, and loved exactly as he was, for all that he was. He understood her, and she, first of all he had ever known, understood him in return. Who, even the brothers who loved them, had ever been able to give them that? It was the foundation of a love born in darkness and grief and waiting fear that bloomed with a white tree into the dream of a new age. End. Thank you for listening. Recorded for Wilfrida as part of the Podfic Summer Swap. I hope you enjoyed.